Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. By the way, let me let you know that we're actually broadcasting today from our sister station, Delmarva Public Radio in Salisbury, Maryland. We're down here doing some work today, doing for our projects on the Delmarva Peninsula and around the state. And so we're broadcasting from here today. So those of you in WEA are listening to us, at least for me, from down here. But three of our guests are in studio, and one's by phone, or two are in studio and two by phone. San Giordano is in our studios at WEAA. He's political consultant and writer for the Baltimore Examiner. Brian Griffiths is there in our studios. He's chairman of the Young Republicans, Maryland Young Republicans, and blogger at redmaryland.com. And as we always like to say, Red Maryland just means the left journal. It means it's close to the right. Dr. Michael McDonald joins us by phone. He's professor of government and politics in the Department of Public and International Affairs at George Mason University in Virginia. He's a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and an expert on redistricting issues around the country. And Craig Rice will be joining us. He's a former member of the Maryland House of Delegates and a member of the Montgomery County Council now and is a elected Democrat. So, gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Great to be back.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And give us your thoughts on this redistricting process. It has caused a lot of controversy. You have the most progressive congressman in the state of Maryland, who also happen to be African-American, who are part of the Progressive Caucus, Elijah Cummings and Donna Edwards, whose districts are affected by this, and especially Donna Edwards is opposed to this. And actually she was seen and reported on in the halls of Congress, poring over a map with a very conservative member of the Republican Party who represents one of the districts that would be affected, Roscoe Bartlett, both of them opposing these new maps, which some say are gerrymandering. And for me, before we start the discussion, I'll say it harkens back to when we were covering this last, around the turn of the century. It sounds funny to say the turn of the century, but on the turn of the century, when then-Governor Glenn Denning and his folks redistricted Maryland in some very strange maps, that actually ended up giving the Democrats six out of the eight seats. And gerrymandering, whether it's Republican-driven or Democratic-driven, Democratic Party-driven, is still up for question, what it really means for the future of our democracy. So we're going to wrestle with that this hour with our guests, San Giordano, Brian Griffiths, Dr. Michael McDonald, and we hope County Councilman Greg Rice from Montgomery County. 410-319-8888. Now, Brian, let me start with you. You've been all over this on your blogs, as I imagine you would be.
Yes, so very much.
So talk a bit about this redistricting from your perspective.
Well, my perspective, and Hassan and I were just talking about this off the air, you know, it's not so much a matter of, you know, as a Republican, obviously, I'd love to see a map that would maximize Republican representation in Congress from the state of Maryland. That being said, though, when you talk about redistricting, the issue is not drawing a map that benefits one party or the other. The thing that needs to be done is to make sure that we keep communities of interest together. You know, people who have the same problems, the same issues, the same life experiences, things like that. People who will be represented by somebody who is somebody who's representative of themselves. And when I testified before the redistricting committee back in August, I said that. You know, my county, Anne Arundel County, has not had a resident congressperson in 20 years. And obviously under this map, we're probably not going to have that either. You know, my issue has always been maps that are fair, not maps that are driven for political motivation. And it does not take a rocket scientist to look at the map that was presented by the committee to the governor and see that there is nothing but rank partisanship at its base, that it was drawn in a way to protect certain members of the House. And really, it was really drawn in a way to provide a winnable district for a Montgomery County Democrat to unseat Roscoe Bartlett in the 6th District. I mean, it really is gerrymandering at its finest. And from my personal opinion, I think everybody associated with it should be ashamed of themselves.
Now, I wonder, Hassan, wait on some of the stuff you've been writing. I mean, you've been a political consultant, actually kind of swinging between Republicans and Democrats at times. Mm-hmm. So your analysis is before we turn to Dr. Michael McDonald.
Well, that's the great thing, Mark, about being an independent. We don't have to rely on just because the party told us so. So we actually analyze this. And Mark, to be quite honest, I honestly look at it and agree with the GOP on this one. It's become purely partisan. When you look at the map that's been given thus far. Now, mind you, the Governor O'Malley has not yet submitted his final plan, and they go into session on Monday morning. So, I mean, he can honestly submit this at 4 p.m. on Friday and give the citizens no time at all to contact their legislators before they go into session on Monday. And I think that when you look at it, the Constitution basically requires that they draw this map based on maintaining equal population. This is truly political. You can honestly see it. And you know, Governor O'Malley has always been self-ambitious. He came through last year. He was one of the only Democrat governors to win in a very Republican loving country. And so this one is basically, it looks like you just want to have seven Democrats and one Republican. So we're going to give you Andy Harris in the first, but we're going to take it away. But it really targets African Americans. And I think that the Black Caucus really needs to join ranks and come and say, no, we're not having this. Because when you look in the fourth, I mean, obviously Donovan Edwards and him taking Montgomery County out of the fourth, it really hurts them. But I think the map that has been submitted by Senator Joe Getty, and I think that he will introduce this map on Monday when session starts, works well for all parties involved, especially African Americans, when right now we only have two. We have Elijah Cummings in the seventh and Donna was in the fourth, and his map actually gives us a third possibility, because in Maryland, in the 10 years, Maryland has increased by 9%. All that 9% has been minorities. So I think it's only fair that another district, majority minority district, is drawn, and he drew that up in the third district, which would be the new third district, which would be located over there in Prince George's and Montgomery and be taken out of the Baltimore region. Obviously, Baltimore has lost population over the last 10 years. So it's an interesting discussion, Mark, and I'm just glad that you brought it here on the airwaves of EAA.
So the question, very quickly before I turn to Dr. McDonald, to say, A, who is Getty? And we should let our listeners know, we're talking about the session. We're talking about a special session that is being called by the governor to deal with the redistricting.
Yeah, Joe Getty is the senator from District 5 out in Carroll County. He had worked as a chief policy advisor during the Governor Ehrlich's administration. He's put out a map. You know, being representative of Carroll County, his concern is the fact that rural Maryland has been targeted by the committee, not just with the elimination of Roscoe Bartlett as a congressman, but also the way that Carroll County was sliced and diced and put into a district with Chris Van Hollen. So he's come out with a plan that would restore the 6th district to a more rural district, and as Hassan said, create a new third district in Prince George's County. Right before we came to air, I got an email, and I haven't been able to see the map yet, that Senator Pipkin from the 36th district on the Eastern Shore is also going to submit his own map too. So there's going to be another competing proposal that is out there as well.
Well, and also for the listeners, Mark, is this is for the congressional lines. When the special session starts right. for about 2 weeks, it's for the, and a lot of these legislators, especially African Americans, are scared to stand up against the governor, because then he has to draw their legislative lines that has to be redistricted when we go back to session in January, when the session starts on January 11th. So you're going to see a lot of people who are against this map, but who are going to be too scared to actually buck their own governor in their own party, because it might be detrimental to them come January.
So I also introduce to the panel we have with this delegate, Aisha Braveboy, who is a delegate from the 25th District in Prince George's County, vice chair of the Black Caucus as well. And Aisha, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you very much.
And Aisha, again, I'm going to get to Dr. McDonald, but from your perspective, I mean, your district in Prince George's County, where Donna Edwards, who has become really one of the potential leading Democratic potential Democratic leaders in the Congress, because especially she may end up as also head of the Progressive Caucus at some point, is not happy with this. And I guess many people in your area are not happy with this as well.
Well, I absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on the show. In fact,
I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Earlier today, I participated in a press conference with the Montgomery County Council. Actually, the majority of the Montgomery County Council has come out to oppose this map, as well as leaders from the Hispanic Asian and African American communities, both in Prince George's and in Montgomery counties. And so earlier today, we all came together to really talk about the inequities of this map and the really important changes that need to be made in order to respect and honor the purpose and intent of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which really protect minority voters from this type of dilution that is being proposed in the map that the advisory committee came up with.
Let me turn. Michael McDonald joins us as well. He's professor of government and politics at George Mason University and a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Has written a lot about redistricting and knows a great deal about it. And I was really interested, even though it is a very homogeneous state, when you were talking in one of the articles I read about Iowa as one of the only states in the nation that does its redistricting in a very non-political way. Talk a bit about what goes on there and some of the other ideas that exist about how a state could approach redistricting or districting for Congress and for their state offices.
Well, our true only two nonpartisan ways of doing redistricting exist in Arizona and California. There is a commission that is not a political commission at all. There are a vetting process that's put in place to ensure that sort of politicians in sheep's clothing can't get onto the commission. And those commissions operate in public eye, so they produce maps, draft maps. There's opportunities for the public to comment both leading up to those draft maps and then afterwards. And then those commissions draw a final plan and adopt those. And those districts are also being drawn under a very strict set of criteria that many of the sorts of things that we've been talking about here in Maryland do apply out there. So respecting the Voting Rights Act, equal population, those are required under federal law, but also respecting existing political boundaries, compact districts, drawing districts that are going to be respectful of communities of interest. Those are also all part of what those commissions are looking at. And so they produced some maps, and in Arizona, it were Democrats who were supportive of these reforms back last decade, and lo and behold, the maps that were produced were not very Democratic-friendly in Arizona, so the reformers didn't get what they want. And in California, we have Republicans who were very much interested in the redistricting reform, and lo and behold, the Republicans didn't get what they wanted, and they've been highly critical of what the maps that the commission produced out there. Another lesson you learn from this is that there are always going to be winners and losers in redistricting, and that no process is going to be perfect because of that fact that you're going to always have someone who's at the end, short end of the stick, and inevitably those people will take the plans to court or do other action in terms of complaining about what the outcome was.
So let me ask two of our other guests here, first starting with Aisha Braveboy, the delegate, active Democrat, second vice chair of the Legislative Black Caucus of Maryland. Why is it so difficult for us to get a nonpartisan? I mean, are you in favor of creating a more nonpartisan way of figuring out the districts in the state of Maryland? And if you are there people in your peer group in the House willing to submit a bill that says we need to do things in a different way?
Well, I think this. I think that the Black Caucus and certainly a lot of the other leaders from the minority communities that I've spoken with really care about respecting the purpose and intent of the Voting Rights Act. And it's really about protecting the interests of all voters, but in particular minority voters that have had, obviously, in this country, a history of voter disenfranchisement. What we've been asking for and what we believe the state of Maryland should do is have a system that respects the purpose and intent of the Voting Rights Act. And that really, and if I could just point out a few things in terms of the inequities in this map that really highlight why this is so important. Currently, the state of Maryland has three congressional districts currently that have an voting age population that is 50+% minority. And that's Congressional District 4 at 77%, Congressional District 7 at 66%, and Congressional District 8 at 50.4%. The proposed maps reduce the number of majority-minority congressional districts from 3 to 2. And so now the 8th Congressional District, which is currently 50.4% minority, becomes 34% minority. Okay? So now that district is no longer a majority-minority district. And what's more interesting is that every single sort of race, that's sort of the majority races for the minorities, black, Hispanic, and Asian, all drop by 5 or more percentage points in that district. And that population is now being moved into Congressional Districts 6 and 3, and both those districts are in the 30 percentage when you're looking at the number of minorities. So really the minority population is being diluted, spread out amongst all of these congressional districts, not just sort of minorities in general, but each specific subgroup is being reduced in Congressional District 8, and that is a huge problem.
Can I jump in here for a minute because
Brian?
This is Mike McDonald. So,
Mike, go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
Yeah, because these are interesting legal questions. First of all, Maryland, like every other state in the country, is subject to Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And so that Section 2 basically says if you have a district that you can draw that is above 50% of a single race, by the way, not multiple races, and there's something that's called racially polarized voting where whites are voting for the white candidate choice and African Americans or Latinos are voting for their candidate choice, then you must draw that district. What's interesting about the 8th district at 50.4%, in order to say that that would be a voting rights district, you'd have to show that that was an effective district under the Voting Rights Act, and you'd have to show that, from what I'm gathering here, is that you've got three races, Asian American, Latinos, and African Americans. You'd have to show that they're all cohesive. They're all voting together. And that's often very difficult to show. So while I believe that the 4th and the 7th are probably protected under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act without doing any of the sort of analyses that would be necessary in order to do it, I don't believe that the 8th district would be protected under the Voting Rights Act because in order to show that it would be protected, you have to show that Asian Americans, Latinos, and African Americans are all voting for the same candidates, and that would be very difficult to show in court.
I was going to say I don't disagree with that. I think the issue here is that these groups are being their voting strength is being diluted, and the question for the policy question for the state of Maryland, which oh by the way is a 45% minority state, and I dare guess it will be 50% in the very near future, over 50% in the very near future. The question, the policy question is, are we okay with diluting minority voters in this way? Whether or not it is survivable under a Section 2 claim, is this good policy for the state of Maryland to diminish the impact of the minority vote? And that's really the question that we have to answer when we go back into this special session.
Now, Brian Griffith, as chair of the Young Republicans in the state, Republicans have not historically been fans of minority districts and often opposing the idea that it was opposed by the Voting Rights Act. But in this case, we're seeing a lot of Republicans saying the opposite, maybe for their own aggrandizement, making sure their seats are kept in an odd coalition to keep that. But I wonder your take on this, because this is, I think one of the only listeners, we're talking about the 8th district, that's Steny Hoyer's district we're talking about. who is a very powerful congressman, I think number three in Congress, or number two on, in the Democratic Party in Congress, and was almost had Nancy Pelosi's job but didn't get it.
Well, the 8th district, district is Van Hollen's district.
That's Van Hollen, excuse me. Thank you.
Montgomery
thank
County. You. But Congressman Hoyer, representing the 5, does represent a large minority population as well. You know, I think what this proves is the fact that, you know, that Martin O'Malley went out of his way. You know, he was kind of equal opportunity in trying to draw a, you know, political map for partisan reasons in which, you know, the both Republicans and minority voters were affected poorly, you know, regardless. I mean, I think the matter is, and it goes back to the point that I made, you know, earlier, is the fact that you need to have communities of interest that are represented, and you need to make sure that lines are compact and fair, and that the people who are representing districts, for the most part, are representative of the people living in that district. And when you start splitting up the African-American community and the Latino community, you get areas that are represented by people who do not understand the interests of those communities, particularly that new third district, which goes pretty much all over the place and takes 9 hours to drive across. Eric Hartley from the Capitol actually did that. It took him 9 hours to cross the district, and part of it, you know, the only way you can connect it through it's by boat. It was a way for Governor O'Malley to dilute. To dilute the voting power of certain populations, and as a way of punishing his enemies and rewarding his friends, and I think that that minority voters should have a serious beef with this governor right now.
And it'd be interesting to see how many actually do, because we saw this in 2007 with the special session with the taxes. Everybody, oh, we don't need that. And they were quiet as the church mouse when it came into session, mm-hmm. because O'Malley and Mike Miller took them in the back room. I don't know what they promised them, but they came out. And so I would really be interested to see, though the African-American community is standing up with the GOP pretty much right now in opposing this map, and you see almost everybody opposing this map except Governor O'Malley, is how many of those individuals are willing to sacrifice their legislative districts in 2012 by standing up next week in the special session. And, you know, honestly, I commend Delegate Brave Boy for coming out against this. And we definitely want to watch and make sure that she's protected over there in Prince George's County, because political retribution is something that we've come to recognize from this particular governor over the years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is you know, at this base level, I mean, this is where politics is more of a contact sport than anywhere else. And it is of no coincidence that the legislative and the congressional redistricting maps were separated in this way, so that it will give the administration plenty of time to find folks who have opposed them, not even just necessarily on the redistricting issue, but also if there's a jobs program that comes through next week, if there's any taxes that come up next week, that anybody who opposes them the knives will be out for them come January when the legislative redistricting plan comes into play too. So now I think it will be very interesting to see how many Democrats actually stand up and oppose the governor on this.
Well, and let me just throw out there that I think that let's open the phones here in just a minute and get people to join us. I think Leo from Bolton Hill is our first caller at 410-319-8888. I don't think this governor is any more or less partisan than any other governor you've ever had when it comes to these maps, or any other governor in the state, in the United States of America, when it comes to, you can look at Pennsylvania and many other states that I could just make a list of, where Republican governors are equally as partisan now to ensure that they control the politics of their state and who gets elected.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, I couldn't agree more with that. And that goes back to the issue that we discussed earlier about having, you know, either bipartisan or nonpartisan commissions to kind of take, you know, you can never take the politics out of this, but you sure can minimize it and make sure that maps like this and maps in some of the other states that we've seen don't get introduced. And that's what we really need to do. I remember back in the late 90s when he was still a member of the House of Delegates, John Leopold introduced legislation to create a nonpartisan commission to take redistricting out of the hands of the governor, and or at least more out of the hands of the governor. And it will be very interesting to see if anybody wants to revisit that issue now that we've seen this map.
I would hope somebody would come and at least create that debate, because we have a system now. I think Dr. McDonald, Michael McDonald, is around the country pretty standard, which is where politicians choosing their constituents rather than constituents choosing their politicians.
Right, and the reason why there's so much pressure on Maryland to eke out another Democratic district has a lot to do with the fact that the Republicans control the process in a number of states out there and are leveraging redistricting to solidify the gains that they had in 2010. And so there's a lot of pressure on Maryland. There's a lot of pressure on Illinois, two places where the Democrats actually control the process, to counter partisan gerrymanders that we're seeing in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Texas, Georgia, and I can go on. I mean, those are some of the major states, but there are other states as well. So that's why there's so much political pressure here being waged, is to eke out that extra district. If we did this in a sort of a nonpartisan approach across the entire country and we had a much more fair map, then that sort of pressure would be much less on here, and you would see, I would hope you would see districts that were much more reflective of the needs and wants of the constituents of Maryland.
We're going to have a very brief break and come back and go right to the phones. Leo and Bolton Hill is our first caller up at 410-319-8888. We're looking at redistricting in the state of Maryland. You just heard Dr. Michael McDonald from George Mason University. Delegate Ayesha Braveboy is with us. Brian Griffiths, who is chair of the Maryland Young Republicans. Hassan Giordano, political consultant and writer for The Examiner, is with us as well. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888, here on WEAA 80.9, the voice of the community. And we're also broadcasting today, I am at least, from Delmarva Public Radio in Salisbury, Maryland. And I remind you on the way out to break here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are here talking about redistricting in the state of Maryland. There'll be a session of the state legislature next week, a special session to deal with these maps. And, of course, in January, they'll be arguing about redistricting for the entire state legislative districts. We are joined this hour by all of you at 410-319-8888, as well as Hassan Giordano, a political consultant and writer for the Baltimore Examiner, Brian Griffiths, who is chairman of the Maryland Young Republicans and a blogger for RedMaryland.com, Delegate Ayesha Braveboy from the 25th District, who is also second vice chair of the Legislative Black Caucus, Dr. Michael McDonald, professor of government and politics in the Department of Public and International Affairs at George Mason University, and a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. 410-319-8888 is the number here, and let us go to the phones. And I think Leo from Bolton Hill, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark Steiner.
Hi, Leo. Welcome.
How you doing? And I say hello to all of your guests as well, and to the public at large. Let me be as brief as I possibly can. Both parties should be kicked in their behinds for deceit and deception. And by that I mean, if you want to proactively educate the public, political education regarding redistricting, you would have done that last year or early this year. Yes, Martin O'Malley is selfish, and he's always been selfish. He's a benevolent despot. He's a king, and you've made a king out of him. But Bob Ehrlich is no different, in my judgment. He does and will do the same kind of things, and both of these wealthy, these millionaire governors are friends. So in point of fact, we have an obligation to educate the electorate, and no one, Stephanie Rawlins Blake, Congressman Elijah Cummings, Ben Cardin, Senator Barbara Mikulski, none of them have sought to do in a proactive sense to set up a town hall meeting or a venue by which the public could be better informed and better educated and consequently more responsive and involved in the process. This situation favors the incumbents, and all of the incumbents, irrespective of their party, want to keep the status quo. And they're not fooling a damn soul. They want to keep things the way they are. So I think we need to pull the covers off of them, Mark. Let's tell it like it is. Who's doing what to educate voters? We talked about a low-income turnout, or I should say a low number of people who turned out in September, primary, but that's the very reason people don't trust politics. They don't come out because they don't. You don't really give a damn about them. Let's care about them and show them that we care by doing something that's constructive and educating them in ways that we know will help everyone in a nonpartisan way. And that's all I have to say.
Leo, thanks so much. I think that, you know, let's just wrestle with this for just a minute before we go on to this map that I just found that was on Everly's website as a professor at St. Mary's College. We'll talk about in a minute. That looks more equitable, but I'll describe it and see what you all think. It will also be on our website at steinershow.org so you can see it. I wonder, you know, Aisha Brevoy, if you think that part of the reason we have such a low voter turnout, especially in working class and poor communities in the state and around the country, is just what Leo's saying. Because when you do maps like this, you know, how when they did that the third congressional district, they did it 10 years ago, they're doing it again to that district. They align these districts, have nothing in common with anybody. It smacks so deeply of not caring about the people that is just one reason of many why people choose not to vote or to participate.
Well, I think that what happens for a lot of people is they feel that the system or the political system doesn't work for them, that they don't truly have a voice, that they don't truly that they're not able to affect policy. And when maps are proposed that really not only dilute minority voters but break up communities, they really feel that they have even less of an opportunity to influence their elected officials. So I think it is absolutely correct. I think the frustration you heard in the voters' voice is a frustration that many of our residents have. While we care about, sometimes we, meaning politicians, care about parties and colors and all of that, but most voters, they just care about whether or not they're going to be able to put food on the table, you know, whether or not they're going to have a job, whether or not their children are going to go to good schools. I mean, those are the issues that really aren't about sort of a party issues. Those are human issues. And I think that we have to bring really humanity back to our jobs as politicians. And that's why, though I am a Democrat and I certainly support the Democratic principles and would like for Maryland to elect as many Democrats at the state and federal level and local level as possible, I also believe that all voices, all and our diverse voices on these issues are what makes Maryland rich, what makes Maryland really sort of a model state in the country. And I think a state like Maryland that is now 45% minority, I mean, most other states can't really speak to the large number of immigrants and the large number of minorities who've not only come to Maryland, but who have contributed to our economy, to our way of life here in the state, and the importance of really just, first of all, party interest must come secondary to the voting rights issues for minorities. I mean, that's not something that I'm coming up with. I mean, that's essentially what the Constitution and what the Voting Rights Act says. The Voting Rights Act, nothing really about partisan political interests. It's about protecting voters and protecting the interests of minority voters. And I think we really have to get back to those human issues so that our voters and the folks who are looking at us to do the right thing believe that we have their best interests at heart and not some national party interest at heart.
So I wonder how important it is to all of you. And by the way, I think we've just been joined by Craig Rice, who's a former member of the House of Delegates, now a member of the Montgomery County Council. Craig, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate it.
Any more people, we should just break out the beer and have a party. I wonder how important it is to all of you, who the people on this panel are both objective in looking at this in terms of their politics, but also range in the partisan views of our country. How important is it, starting with you, Michael McDonald, for the future of our democracy, that legislative districts should have some community integrity to them, that they should represent a place where people view themselves as part of a community, be that a racial community or be that a geographic community that may cross all kinds of racial and political lines, but have some integrity on a level. I don't know how well that exists in many ways, but how important is that, and how do we even get there? Michael McDonald.
Right. Well, first to respond to the caller that just left.
Please, go ahead.
For people who are interested in learning more about redistricting, over the last decade, I worked with a number of reform groups and other groups that were really interested in educating the public on the issue of redistricting. We produced a really wonderful a citizen's guide to redistricting. If you just Google that or whatever, you'll find it online, produced by the Brennan Center with some support from other foundations. And it's a wonderful primer on redistricting. And I absolutely agree with the caller that we need to start having these discussions in advance of the redistricting rather than after the fact, because if you're going to define these communities like we're discussing here, we have to know what the voters think their communities are. And you have to have that discussion in advance of the redistricting. In fact, I would have it even in advance of the census before we know anything about how the chips may fall during the actual redistricting. So let's have that discussion. Let's define those communities, and that'll enable voters to be better represented. And the state of the political science literature on this is just very much of what the common sense has already been said here. When people are represented in districts that conform better with existing political boundaries, what you find is a much better sense of representation between the constituents and their member. People know who their member is. There's higher turnout associated with that because they also have those links to their government, which they don't have when lines are cut up and people don't understand who represents them. And also, this protects incumbents when these lines are all crazy, because challengers find it very difficult to run in districts that are stretching across 9 hours that you'd have to drive across the district. And so it insulates incumbents from change. And often what they're doing when they're drawing these lines, by the way, is they're cutting out primary challengers, they're cutting out undesirable communities within their district that haven't been supporting them in the past. And as a result, you get districts that are very heavily Democratic and Republican. They're not very reflective of the middle of the country. And as a consequence of that, we get a lot of polarization in our politics on top of everything else. So if you want to heap a lot of blame on things, of course, there's lots of different moving parts to our democracy, but one important cog in this whole machinery, and it needs to work very effectively, is redistricting. And right now, it's a system that's broken, and it's something that needs to be fixed.
Well, let me just, by the way, I just looked up what you talked about, because I had not seen it before. I wish I'd seen it before the show. We'll be doing some more shows next week on this during the debate in Maryland, a Citizen's Guide to Redistricting. We will post a link to that at steinershow.org. right after the show, so people can look at that in advance of our coming shows. And just to read you one piece, it says a lot to me how in most states these legislative district lines are drawn by legislators themselves. The way the lines are drawn can keep a community together or split it apart, leaving it without a representative who feels responsible for its concerns. The way lines are drawn can change who wins an election. Ultimately, the way lines are drawn can change who controls the legislature and which laws get passed. So the question is, I wonder, and let me ask our other panelists here. We'll start with our newest guest, Craig, and then go to Brian, Hassan, and then Aisha very quickly all. Do you think that someone's going to put up a fight next week when the special session takes place for the citizens of Maryland to draw districts that keep our community's integrity and reflect who we are, as opposed to reflect the political wishes of the Democratic political leadership? Someone's going to hold my breath for that. I'm not naive, but do you think someone's going to put up a fight? Craig, you were there. You represented. You're now in Montgomery County. Let me ask you all: are we going to see a fight for the people or not?
Sure. I really hope so. And I've had multiple conversations today with a number of people, all the way from the governor's staff to the chair of our Montgomery County delegation, Brian Feldman, in talking about what our plan is from here on out. And I think that it's been well said by a number of your guests so far, as I listened for the brief time that I've been on, in that this is really about connectivity and making sure that our constituents understand about being a part of that greater community. You know, we just went through a redistricting in Montgomery County, and when we redistricted the entire county, the commission came up with a plan that kept communities together. I represent the northern part of Montgomery County and part of it that now would be a part of this new, brand new six that comes all the way from Western or Washington and Allegheny and Garrett all the way down into Montgomery County, which doesn't make sense. There's no connectivity there. There's no commonality between these communities. And I think that there are a lot of people now that they know, and I think that that's the part that was our responsibility is as a part of this press conference we held today, to make sure that people know what is out there and what's at stake. And I think that Aisha said it well, and that when we talk about political power, we're not talking about the politicians themselves. We're talking about the actual voters. They are the ones that have political power, and we're looking at that political power be minimized. And in a lot of the areas, it's funny, a lot of people never thought of Montgomery County as a minority powerhouse. But I want to tell you that's changed, and that we have a large pocket of minority residents. In fact, we're now, and I know the term really doesn't make sense, but a majority-minority district, a majority-minority county, because that's what we are. We have a multitude of minorities now that are here. So when we talk about disenfranchisement of Montgomery County voters, we're talking about disenfranchisement of minority voters. They go hand in hand. And so, you know, it's a major concern of ours. I've expressed that concern to, again, the leader of our delegation and told him where we are and what we expect to have happen. I've talked to members of the delegation themselves that now have concerns about this. So I hope that there will be a fight. But I assure that as a representative of my constituents, I will be a continued voice and have told the governor's staff this. I intend to work with them, but will not be silent about the fact that I have some concerns about the way this map is drawn and what it means for my constituents.
There are a bunch of people trying to call in. I do want to get a couple of callers here, but let me go quickly to Brian and Aisha, then we'll come back to Hassan. Will there be a fight?
I think there'll certainly be a fight, at least from the Republican side. It'll be interesting to see. You know, I certainly hope that the Democratic side of the aisle stands up for what is right and stands up for the idea that districts should be compact and reflective of their community interests. It'll be interesting to see whether that fight from the Democratic side or from the other side comes in the form of a floor fight next week in the special session, or whether or not there'll be litigation coming afterwards. But I think there's certainly a decent chance of that. But I think there will be a fight, at least from the Republican side, because let's face it, the Republicans have nothing really to lose in this. I mean, it's God's honest truth. You know, it's just a matter of who joins our side in that fight and whether or not this takes the form of a legislative battle or a legal battle after the adoption of the districts.
And Aisha, do you expect, as a leading Democrat, that there will be Democrats to fight for a more nonpartisan way to do this? Or do you think that's just not going to happen? Aisha, are you still with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Hello? Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes, we got you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry. One of the things I wanted to mention is that a lot of people, when this map first came out, we were informed of it. We kind of saw the boundaries, but we didn't have any details. And even when the map was posted on the Department of Planning's website, the map did not have any details that went along with it. So a lot of people looked at the map, really wasn't sure. I mean, they could see the shifts, but they didn't know what that meant. For the minority communities, they didn't know what cities were being moved. They really had very little information. And that's actually something that's really critical, and that's missing from the information being provided by this advisory committee. They really should have provided details to go along with this map. In order to determine what was actually happening in the maps, we had to give it to our consultant in order to run the equivalency files that were actually available online through Maptitude software. And redistricting software is pretty expensive, highly technical, and very difficult to use. And so you need really a trained professional in order to do the analysis. But we were able to do that because we've engaged a consultant. And so we were able to figure out the information, and we've actually been able to provide now information to our colleagues who had no idea how this proposal affected the minority community. And so I think as people understand what's going on, and I'm so happy that Craig Rice has reached out to our colleagues over in Montgomery County, I believe that people will see the inequities, and I have a feeling that we'll see some change.
But before we turn to Hassan, let me open the phones again at 410-319-8888. And Stephanie, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Mark. How are
you? I'm very well. Welcome.
Greetings to your guests. One of the things that you were talking about a little earlier, you were talking about the lack of voter turnout and how disappointing it was. I think one of the problems is that a lot of people within the inner city are not fully educated on the process. And they don't understand that if you don't vote in the primaries for who you want, then you can't fix it when the main election comes up. And I think that's where a lot of the fault lies, is because nothing, you know, there aren't people educating people within the inner city as to the voting process. When you know, I'm old school, and we learned about the voting process in school. I don't even think they teach it now. And so you have a lot of people who are really uneducated as to how the process works, and that it is imperative that you get out during the primaries to cast your vote.
Stephanie, I appreciate you being part of the show. Hassan, you watch this local scene a great deal. Your response to Stephanie?
Well, you know, I've been going around. We've been talking about this low voter turnout. But in even to answer you, Mark, I don't have a high favorability of these people bucking the system, so to speak, when session starts. I mean, at the end of the day, we never see it, especially from the African American standpoint here in Baltimore City. As Craig said, they're a majority minority over there in Montgomery County. We've been that for decades here in the city, and we still have people begging for scraps from the table who are the majority in the city, who don't even get the minority inclusion of the 35% that we're supposed to hear. And I think with this process, when we come up in Annapolis, you're going to hear some fuss the first day or two. And then I think that the governor is going to take them in the back room, work out a deal, and come back. You won't hear anything else. And I say that to say, because when I mention this on other shows, Mark, people were like, yeah, right, you're going to have the usual suspects, the Jill Carter's and the rest race, a little bit of ruckus, and then you're going to hear nothing else. And they began to name leaders. And I just got an email as we're talking from Prince George's County, who basically said the same, from the Fannie Lou Hamer Political Action Committee, and said, with the exception of Delegate Brave Boy, that the silence of the Prince George's County African-American elected officials is alarming and deafening and disgraceful on this issue of congressional redistricting, and to allow the white power structure to dictate the political districts and say that they know what's best for the African-American communities as it relates to the wealth, health, and education is 21st century slavery. So I think that you see it all around. I believe that the GOP will fight. Like you say, you don't have anything to lose. But I really don't think that the 44, 45 African-American legislators, senators, and delegates will actually pick up the mantle and fight for their constituents. And that's why they stay home on election day, because there's no real good product to go out there and buy or vote for.
There's a map we're going to put on our website at steinershow.org that I found very interesting that would probably hurt Congressman Sarbanes more than anybody. But it's by Gorell, and it will be submitted. It's eight districts, and when you look at his districts he put up, there are districts that are contiguous. The first district on the eastern shore going to Baltimore County, the second district being most of Baltimore County, the third district being Baltimore City, and the top of Anne Arundel County and the southwest part of Baltimore County, which is mostly an African-American district. The fourth, which is almost wholly Prince George's County. The fifth, which is southern Maryland plus Anne Arundel County, and the three counties below it. The seventh, he has Howard, Montgomery County, and parts of Anne Arundel and parts of Prince George's County, which are like-minded communities. The sixth being almost all of western Maryland and part of western Montgomery County. The eighth being wholly Montgomery County, which in some ways, Ayesha Brave Boy, look at this map, and there could be lots of ways you could twist this, but at least this is an attempt to make it contiguous communities that know one another.
Right, and you know, I certainly will take a look at it. And I think that what we have to look at not just the configuration but also the details. So I look forward to looking at that map and other maps that really provide more contiguity and appear to create more communities of interest without diluting the minority character of the 4th district of the and of the 7th district and also
right.
of the 8th district in a county that is majority-minority, as Craig Rice said.
I have a caller called in, didn't want to stay on, but she wanted to say we in Baltimore are not uneducated. We just are disgusted with the politicians. So I thought that deserved a bit of an airing before we go. And I Michael McDonald, just finally, this is something that we're seeing that really is – this is not just happening in Maryland. This kind of disgust and battle is taking place across America.
Right, and we're trying to educate the public on it. One of the other projects that I've been engaged in is publicmapping.org, and we are allowing the public to draw their own redistricting plans through their web browsers. Now, we don't have the software up for Maryland, but we've been running redistricting competitions in Virginia, Ohio, Michigan, Minnesota, Arizona, the city of Philadelphia, and now New York. And one of the fun things that we found out of this was that in Michigan, the second place winner was a 10-year-old. And the editorial board...
I love it.
Yeah, they really loved it because the 10-year-old was able to draw districts that followed existing political boundaries and kept everything together. So it really tells you that maybe putting this in the hands of babies is maybe the best approach in this case because they're not naive, but they're innocent to the politics of what's going on here.
And this goes to Hassan Giordano's passion to make sure that 18-year-olds can run for office. Dr. Michael McDonald, I thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Delegate Aisha Brave Voice, always a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you.
Good to have you out there fighting for the citizens.
Absolutely.
Councilman Craig Rice, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Brian Griffiths, thank you for being the bulldog on the right that you are.
Thanks, Mark.
And Hassan Giordano, keep on writing and shaking up our brainwaves. Good to have you on the air with us as well.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And we'll continue this next week. We'll have to come back to look at this. I want to remind you on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back, and we'll be visiting those who are occupying Baltimore, Washington, and Wall Street, do more during the course of that hour as well. Thank our guests. Thank you all for calling in. Please stay with us here at the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 80.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll be right back.